Hello and welcome to the latest Brewing Podcast. This week, in a really snappy 20-minute chat, we speak to Ben Lord, a bond fund manager at M&G, about the risks to inflation and what it may mean for inflation-linked assets. Lots of politics, of course, but we know you love it. But before we get to that, please first listen to our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation, which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin Podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, a research analyst at Brewin Dolphin, and today we're delighted to welcome Ben Lord of M&G, a returning guest to the podcast, a good friend to the podcast, and lead manager on their, amongst other mandates that he works on, but lead manager on their M&G inflation-linked UK corporate bond fund. So much going on in the investment universe, and certainly in Ben's universe. We want to talk about inflation, growth, interest rates, the election, Brexit, what it means to sterling, and of course there's a credit component to Ben's work as well. But before we get there, there is a technical point that Ben wants to bring to you, our listeners, about the inflation calculation that could have a big impact on inflation-linked assets in the coming years. So, as I said, there's some technicality to this, but if you could neatly summarise it for us, Ben, that would be appreciated.
I will do my best.
How are you, first of all? Are you okay?
Very well.
Great. Great presentation at the Bond Vigilantes event, but sorry to knock you off your stride. Back to RPI.
Thank you. So, we saw a letter from the statistician to the Chancellor of the Exchequer in which it was surprising to hear the level of disregard, frankly, almost hatred that the statistician has for RPI. He refers to it as a flawed measure and one that has detrimental ramifications all over the economy. So it was really strongly worded stuff. Now, we've known that RPI has been a bit high for a while. We know that it's calculated off an old-fashioned arithmetic mean rather than the new lower geometric mean. We know that it gives a higher number in most environments. But to hear quite how disparaging the statistician was about it was a surprise.
The other and this statistician is someone of importance?
Or? Yeah, he is head of the ONS, the Office of National Statistics, Sir David Norgrove, and he is ultimately running the office that will be able... I guess the best way to frame this is the second surprise we got in the letter was the revelation that come 2030, when the 4 1/8 2030 index-linked gilt matures, no longer does the statistician need to go to the Bank of England for them to say if this is a fundamental and detrimental change to RPI. They then refer it to the Chancellor, and the Chancellor has to sign off to make that change to RPI that is fundamental and detrimental to holders of UK index-linked gilts. That system, which has always been the way the linker market works, changes on the day that that bond matures in 2030. And at that point, the person in Sir David Norgrove's seat will be able to change RPI for statistical reasons and not get any prior authorization from the Bank of England or from the Chancellor, just change it. And he says in this letter, come 2030 at the latest, if you don't allow me to do anything sooner, we are going to make RPI CPIH. So the Retail Prices Index will still exist, but it'll be 80 to 90 basis points lower.
And the net outcome is those people holding assets linked to RPI will see a sort of a marked drawdown in value. If not, it sort of happens over time, but this is a negative outcome for those holding RPI linked assets.
This is a very negative outcome for people holding RPI, long dated RPI linked assets. if you hold RPI linked assets between 2025 that mature between 2025 and 2030, there's a debate to be had. Anything before 2025, it looks like you're fine and RPI will remain untouched. But to perhaps make the illustration best, take the longest dated, longest duration index linked gilt, the 2068s, and if that RPI is made CPIH, you're taking down break-evens there by 80 to 90 basis points, which is the difference between RPI and CPIH.
Yeah.
You assume nominal gilt yields stay the same. That means real yields have to rise to get the break-evens down by 80 to 90 basis points. In today's money, if you were to price in that entire move today on the 2068 linker, it's about 40% lower in price after that change has been made.
So this
has got 50 years duration.
So these are big moves. There's lots of other things happening in inflation-linked assets that you'll be concerning you. But is this enough on its own to make you want to dump UK inflation-linked assets, or is it just sort of something we need to really pay very close attention to in the years ahead?
It's a very good question. I think you need to watch very carefully. There is a chance that the changes get phased in. There's a consultation that's supposed to begin in January of 2020, run for 3 months, so everyone gets a chance to feed in their views. I don't think it's going to alter the path. I think the statistician has said they are going to change RPI and make it CPIH, and I don't see that changing. But there are many different ways that it can happen and over what time period and so on and so forth. Now, this is probably the thing the market's grappling with most, because no one has dumped long-dated RPI assets yet. The difficulty the market is having today is how to price in when this change happens. Does it happen in 25? Does it happen in 2030? Does it happen in one go? Is there any compensation? Is there any glide path for the time period that it should be? So it's just a very difficult issue. In my mind, I definitely want to be watchful for when to get out of those longest dated RPI linked assets, and that's a firm conviction. But at the moment, I haven't worked out when will be best to do that. And the market today remains very, very strong.
Okay, right. Well, let's switch to... Well, it's hard to go anywhere other than sort of political matters. And there's sort of a triangulation of things here, isn't there? There's, you know, what might the election outcome be? What might that mean for UK inflation? And what that might mean for the value of associated assets? So I don't know whether you want to sort of talk us through the key scenarios would be a sort of Labour administration, a hung parliament or a Tory administration, what that means for inflation and inflation-linked assets in your eyes, whether that's sort of relation to sort of sterling or UK economic performance. So sort of a big sort of hospital pass for you to deal with, and I'll try and cut it up as you answer.
So I agree. I think those are the three scenarios that I'm thinking about at the moment. So the most likely of a workable majority would be a Conservative majority, especially if the polls are to be believed. What does that do? I think the knee-jerk response to a Conservative majority is that the pound rallies, is that break-evens therefore fall. It is that gilt yields probably rally. I think as the gilt market focuses on the risk-off scenarios being avoided, a pro-business scenario being in power, better growth than feared, somewhat better inflation than feared. I think the gilt market, the gilt yield sell-off in a relief rally. And the other part of that is the sort of rally in risk means that I think credit spreads and probably equities rally as well. The questions I would have are around the sustainability of those knee-jerk responses, particularly around inflation, because I do think that whilst the pound would rally short-term, we've got to keep our eyes on the current account balance, and we're still in a significant deficit. And that still means that whilst the knee-jerk may be a short-term rally in the pound, longer-term we still have very good reasons to fear that sterling is overvalued, and that there is therefore more imported inflation to come further down the road.
It's amazing, isn't it, you sort of talk about sterling overvaluation. I mean, using sort of standard models, whatever you think they're worth, there is potentially some cheapness in sterling, but you're sort of focusing on the current account as something that actually outweighs any of those purchasing power analysis.
I always look at it as the medium-term fundamental viewpoint. That's where I go. And it sort of works at the minute. It's surprising at the minute, because even after the devaluation that we had post the referendum decision, the deficit still hasn't improved. So it is probably too long term for many, but for my purposes, I see no reason to change it. We're still reliant on the kindness of strangers.
And also what we learned from your presentation at the Bond Vigilantes event is that the no deal Brexit hasn't sort of gone away. You know, there is...
No, I agree.
It may resurface later in 2020.
Yeah, if we get a Conservative majority, and this came clear because Boris Johnson did a deal with Nigel Farage to get the Brexit Party to pull out of the seats that are currently held by Conservatives. But one of the two conditions there was that they would not extend the transition period beyond the current date of the 31st of December 2020. So the Conservative administration, if we're in that scenario, are going to have to draw up all of the free trade agreements with all over the world and have those in place, but with Europe at the front of the queue, because at the end of 2020, the transition agreement ends, and if it's not agreed by then you have a no deal scenario. So it's definitely not gone away. I think the other way that I'm looking at it is, given I'm thinking in those three political scenarios that you outline, and I'm thinking about the pound, break-evens, gilt yields and risk, credit in my case, credit spreads, is actually that a Labour majority, workable majority, to me looks and smells a lot like a no-deal Brexit. You will get weakness in the pound.
In terms of asset price performance.
Yeah, yeah. You get weakness in the pound. You get significant move higher in gilt yields, because there's just a lot of issuance and a lot of uncertainty about this new expansionist agenda. And I think you end up getting, from the weakness in the pound, you get higher break-evens, and then ultimately you get something of a risk off in credit and equities, because there's just such an anti-business feel to what we're hearing. So those things are exactly the same moves I would expect in those four sort of blocks as you were getting a no deal.
I mean, when we formulate our views and communicate them, we always try to deliver a neat narrative, but we know there's sort of complications with them. And as you said, the Tory sort of pro-business label has some contradictory elements, with the threat of no deal still sort of permeating. Yep. And then the Labour government, obviously with inherent concerns about sort of taxation, but also guaranteeing our place in the customs union. Maybe there are some pro-business elements to that. And I just sort of wonder basically how much downside you see in sterling, because it is seemingly the dinner party conversation is that sterling gets absolutely sort of crucified in a Labour administration. I wonder to what extent you agree or sympathise with that, or whether on this sort of quite, you know, elements of pro-business in the guaranteeing place in the customs union, actually there's some support for sterling there.
I'm thankful I haven't been at any of your dinner parties.
I'm so sorry, Ben. You'll be first name on the list for the next one.
I sort of think that a range somewhere between, in cable, somewhere between 135, 140 and 120. So a very wide range. And if we get some of the more aggressive, stronger Labour policies, I think we'll be testing the bottom end of that range.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
And then there is not an insignificant chance of a hung parliament then? In your mind,
yeah.
And I guess there is a very real risk of a hung parliament. What does that sort of mean, do you think, for assets?
I think it's probably not a bad outcome, particularly in terms of limiting perceived downside from high gilt issuance, weak pound, and all the things we've just mentioned. Clipping some of the extremes of these political views that seem to have just become so polemicised in recent years probably is no bad thing. So I think you end up, it depends whether it's a right of centre hung or a left of centre hung, but I sort of think it's no bad thing. I guess the frustration is that it leads us to continued enormous uncertainty around Brexit. We won't get any clarity, there'll be no decision made, and it probably means another referendum to try to get through the impasse. But it does feel to me that it is likely, and there is already deal making going on.
Is there any, I'm sort of asking now really about your fund positioning, but are there any obvious or any would any of the asset classes behave sort of similarly, no matter the outcome of the election? Do you see, where do you see gilt yields going? What do you see happening for credit spreads and things like that?
That's a really good question, and I think the one area that I think fundamentally is going to move in the same direction, no matter which of the three outcomes we've spoken about, is gilt yields go higher, because there seems to be cross-parliament support for the end of austerity now. It's all about fiscal expansion. Obviously to significantly greater and lesser degrees, depending on the makeup of parliament, but
maybe even not that significant.
It may even not be that significant, but to my mind, no matter what, we've had 10 years of austerity, and across parliament, no matter who they are, there is a view that we need to expand fiscally and loosen the purse strings, and that to my mind suggests gilt yields are probably not a million miles away from their lows.
Okay, so what else are you doing in the fund based on those sort of various political scenarios, but also sort of global economic conditions at the moment?
So I think in the fund what I've been mainly doing is there's been a 50 basis point sell-off in break-evens, short-dated break-evens in the UK, as no deal risk has been pushed away further down the horizon, replaced by an election on the 12th of December.
So inflation expectations have fallen in the
50 basis points in the space of a month, and that is about as significant a move as I've seen in the last 9 and a bit years of running the fund. So that has got my attention somewhat. I have been moving some of my sort of TIPS holdings and Bund Linker holdings back home because to just take advantage of some of that cheapness, albeit on balance, I still think there's a bit more to come. I still think the break-evens could fall a bit further from just under 3%, and I'm looking for sort of 2.6, 2.5%.
Especially with a Tory administration, a bit of sterling strength,
exactly.
Break-evens fall a
bit. So I think there's a bit further to come. And there's been a bit of a global disinflation everywhere else except the UK, where we've just managed to somehow weaken the pound again and again and again. So I'm watching that, and I am moving the fund back into gilt linkers, but I do think I've got to be watchful of timing. I'm not convinced now's the time to go all in. In duration, I'm still at around 1 year. It's shorter than I've been. You know, at the beginning of the year, I was about 1.3.
You've been negative in the past.
That wasn't the greatest investment, fund position.
Sorry, I wasn't calling you out on it. I'm just trying to get the context of how you're feeling about duration.
For different reasons, I don't feel that that's appropriate now. I do feel that gilt yields are... I do feel firmly that we've seen the lows in gilt yields for this cycle. And I do think that we're nearer the bottom in gilt yields than the top. I think we're going higher. That being said, if you own linkers and you take your duration to zero, you become a pure break-even fund. And as I've just said, I don't think break-evens are yet screaming value in the UK. They're certainly better value than they were a month ago. So at the moment, it's not the time to take duration shorter because there's also a break-even consequence. So the other thing I've been busying myself with in the fund year to date is around credit risk. And credit started the year very cheap after that quite significant sell-off in risk and rally in rates that we had at the end of 2018. We hit a liquidity pocket and spreads went wider. And in the first 2 months of the year, we had a really significant and rapid rally, and I took off a decent portion of my credit risk then. And in the last couple of months after the summer, we've seen another period of very strong performance. So I've actually managed to take the fund to having less credit risk than it ever has done before.
And the valuation call rather than a recessionary risks?
I certainly am not as bullish as other fund managers. I'm not convinced that we're not going to see a recession in the next 2 years. The yield curve has inverted. I think that there is so much geopolitical risk everywhere one looks these days. What happens if the Conservative majority doesn't get the free trade deal done at the end of 2020 and we do, fall off the cliff and that no deal risk becomes real again? It's amazing to me how in this globalized world with this enormous exchange of information every second of the day, how a tweet from Trump about trade could effectively plunge Germany into recession. without it actually mattering it's that much to the US or to China. So I am nervous about some of these geopolitical risks. I am nervous that some of them haven't been put to bed. You've got to recognise that certain conditions have been met, that we're getting closer to a recession than we have been for a number of years, and none less so than the fact that we've been in an expansion for 10 years. Now, so I am more conservative than many, I think, but I'm not calling a recession a real and present threat. I'm just aware of these risks. And so a bit shorter duration on valuation and quite a lot shorter on credit. I don't feel I'm being paid sufficiently for the risks.
I mean, my final question, a slightly sort of techie one, in that we've discussed how inflation has sort of cheapened up, you know, break-evens have fallen, and you've said they could yet fall a little bit further. You sort of see the title, you know, the name of this fund, M&G Inflation Linked Fund. You know, if those break-evens have fallen, you know, might one expect this fund to have had a very difficult year, and has it? Well, I know it hasn't, but why has that not materialised?
Yeah, so the fund has, I've been playing defence, basically, and it's happened for a number of reasons, and it's probably taken longer than I might have liked for the defensive positioning that I've put the defensive place that I put the fund in to start really paying off, but it has done so in the last month. The first was that I knew RPI reform was coming. I believed they were going to take about 30 basis points off RPI. I wasn't quite sure when, so I took the fund very short dated. I wanted to have as little price exposure to a move down in RPI that I thought was coming from RPI reform as possible. And then when we got the big move down in break-evens as no deal risk got priced out and the announcement of the election got priced in its place, that helped out. That positioning in very short dated linkers helped out, helped out the move that we've seen lower in break-evens. I've got some swaps on for the same reason, just pay RPI and receive fixed. Being paid almost 4% on some of those inflation swaps, and again that has helped smooth the trajectory down in the fund. So yeah, I've played defence, it has worked in the last month or two, and at the moment, given my view on break-evens, I'm still slightly defensive, less so than I was a month ago, but I'm still trying to position for a little bit further weakness in UK break-evens and trying to improve the performance from that period.
Okay, Ben, well, we wish you luck with that, and we commend you on your ongoing performance in the fund. Thank you very much for your time. And when you get back, check your inbox. I'm sure there'll be an invite to my next dinner party in there. To our listeners, thanks very much for listening. Let us know what you think on Twitter, referencing hashtag Brewing Podcast, or leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. Of course, you can hear more from Ben and the team. How can they hear more from you and the team, Ben?
Well, the Bond Vigilantes blog is still up and going, and we're still contributing to that.
And you tweet a bit as well.
We tweet a bit. I see, yeah.
And you do, you know, podcasts like this, so great. Everyone wins. Okay, thank you very much to our listeners. We look forward to bringing you another podcast next week.